Welcome to episode 350 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. 350 episodes. That's like 7 times 50 episodes.
Way to go, Math Whiz.
There's a word for this, but I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't know if it's not sesquicentennial, because that's 150. This is a sesquicentennial or sesquicentennial. If anyone knows, you should let us know.
Yeah, I'm going to go with sesquicentennial, although
it doesn't
actually describe us, because we're not 350 years old, because that whole centennial thing means years. So we're more like sesquicentennial.
Yeah. Okay. Sesquicentennial.
Yeah. It's a thing. I'm sure of it.
I don't think it's a thing, Josh.
It is now. All right. Well, we should probably actually maybe get into the show here a little bit. We've actually got some listener feedback this week. This was all sent to us via email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. This first one is from Jeff. He says, "Howdy. I rolled back my PC to Windows 8.1 from Windows 10. I tried Windows 10 for a couple of months, and while it is nice, I still have it on my laptop. I decided that Windows Media Center still has more to offer me than Windows 10 does. I made sure to tell them that when I rolled back, for what it's worth. I have a basic setup with a Dell XPS desktop, a HAPOG 2255 tuner and Time Warner cable. I get 8 ClearQuam channels in my language, and that's all I need for this setup." I like how he says 8 tuners is all he needs. Like, some people need more than 8, but I can just get by on 8 tuners. He says, "My HTPC in the living room is set up with a Seton Infinity V4 and cable card for all the other channels. The issue I have after I set this PC back up is that when I tune to a live TV channel, there's a 50-second delay before the show starts playing. When I play back recorded TV, it starts instantly. Any idea why this might be happening? Thanks, Jeff. P.S. I still enjoy the show, even if I don't have an Xbox or a Windows phone." Well, Jeff, you can fix those problems. You can buy a Windows phone and an Xbox. See, I'm the problem solver. All right, so I actually do have some ideas for this, and I sent these back to Jeff, but I've not heard back from him yet. To me, this sounds like a tuner problem, Richard. You know, my first question would be, are his recordings that he's made since rolling back, do they also start about 50 seconds late? That might be a little bit hard to tell, but it might be worth trying to figure out.
Wait, he already answered that question.
No,
when I play back recorded TV, it starts instantly.
Well, but does he mean recorded TV that has been recorded since? I mean, maybe he does. But either way, like, I mean, he's saying that it starts instantly. That doesn't mean that it started recording instantly. Like, this could be a hard thing to tell, because typically your media center starts recording 3 minutes early, and
right.
I think that would be a hard thing to tell. So it's worth checking out at least. You know, maybe just keep a close eye on it. I don't know.
It does sound like a tuner issue. It sounds like there's something wrong with it not being able to get to the channel as quickly as it should.
Right. So I think it's probably a tuner issue. It's possible it's a driver issue from rolling back. So I would definitely try updating your drivers to make sure you've got all the latest stuff. The other thing is, it could be a hardware tuner issue. It sounds like he's got multiple cards in here, or multiple USB tuners. I'm not exactly sure what a 2255 is, but maybe because you've got multiples, try pulling all but one of them out. See if you still have the issue. If you don't, try the next one. And if you don't, try the next one. And to do this, you're probably going to have to go through TV setup every time. Maybe. I'm not entirely sure on that, because I've never tried removing tuners from a Media Center PC without going back through TV setup. But the reason you may have to do this is because Media Center kind of just likes to pick its own defined order for which tuner it's going to go with.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do about it. There's no way to really determine that, at least not easily. So, like, for example, when I was rocking the Seton Infinity V 4, the PCI version of the Infinity V 4, it always, always, always started with tuner number 3. Always. No idea why. And it's not always tuner number 3 for everybody, but for me, it was always tuner number 3. So pull them all out and try to see if you can narrow it down to one specific piece of hardware. If the driver update didn't work, obviously try the driver update first. That's going to be way faster and easier to test. And hopefully you'll find, hopefully you'll just find a bad driver. If not, hopefully you'll just find one bad tuner and either you can just make do with a couple less or buy another one, I guess.
And if you're not able to get that resolved, I mean, it may also make sense to give Seton a call if you're still having problems after doing that troubleshooting.
Yep. Well, he's not using Seton.
I thought he was.
Well, he's got a Seton on the other machine, but it sounds like the this 50-second delay is with the tuner with all the, or the computer with all the ClearQuam tuners in it.
Ah, okay, okay.
If it is the PC with the Infinity V4 in it, then just submit a support ticket with Seton and see if they can figure out the issue. That's what I would do. Their support people are really good.
Indeed.
All right, thank you. Yeah, thank you a lot, Jeff, for that, and hopefully you'll get that figured out pretty quickly.
All right, well, we have a message also from David, and this is one that I can totally relate to. David says, I took the plunge and decided to give Plex a try. It has been an unmitigated disaster. Two main problems. Plex changes the names and the artwork of videos without warning, and terrible importing of videos. First problem is more tedious than anything else, and it's fairly simple to manually change things back. The second is more problematic. An example is a series with 6 seasons. With each season in a separate folder, Plex will only import 4 of the 6 folders. What am I doing wrong? If you or any of your listeners know of a site where I could be directed to figure Plex out, it would be greatly appreciated. Yeah, I don't have answers for you, but I can't say that this is significantly different from my past experiences with Plex.
Really?
Well, I definitely had the naming issue. That just drove me crazy. Because I like to very specifically name things the way I want to name them. And if it goes messing that up, particularly if it's changing artwork, that's going to drive me nuts.
Yeah, a lot of people are very attached to the specific artwork that they've chosen, or artwork that they've chosen. And for me, I just don't really care that much about it. So it never bothered me.
Yeah. And as for importing, I have also experienced a problem where it will import some stuff, but not other stuff. Now, I can't say I've had the experience where it was some seasons and not others, but I also don't know what the reason was. I honestly never spent enough time to figure it out. So maybe I should also get directed to that site that's going to help us figure Plex out. And if any of y'all know of that site, I'd like to know too.
Well, isn't that site the Plex Forums? You go to the forum.
You know how I feel about forums.
I know. But you go to the forum, you ask a question, somebody answers it, hopefully. Hopefully with something other than RTFM, and hopefully you get it fixed. I don't know. Like for me, I wonder if those 2 folders for David that didn't get mapped correctly, I wonder if his files are named completely differently or something like that. You know, I haven't seen this happen, but I don't have, I'm not sure. Okay, I do have a couple of TV series in my Plex library, but not much because TV seasons aren't something that I hang on to a lot of, you know, and they're not something that I buy on disc a lot and things like that. So I only have a couple of shows at all in my Plex library, and none of them have more than a couple of seasons. So I've never personally run into that problem.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't have an answer, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess start with the Plex forums and hopefully You know, hopefully some of our listeners will hear this and have some ideas for David too. And if you're listening to this and you think you know what the problem is, then you can send us an email message too at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, and we'll pass that information along to David. We won't give him your email address unless you want us to, so that this can be somewhat anonymous if you want. And then, of course, we'll also read those tips back the next time we record an episode of Entertainment 2.0. All right, so that's it for the feedback this week. Let's get into the news. Richard, we have Media Center news to talk about.
We do. And this is like the best kind of Media Center news, because A, it's good news, and B, it's about something new.
Yeah, that's solving a real problem that people have been having since September 15th. And that's the lack of a Netflix plugin inside of Windows Media Center. You know, we had talked, it must have been a month or two ago now at this point, maybe slightly longer, that Mark Davis, the developer behind the Amazon Instant Video plugin for Netflix, was planning to work on a Netflix plugin for Media Center to replace the one that Netflix was killing. Well, it's available now. He just released a beta version of it, I believe, at the end of last week. And you can go and download it for yourself. It's not just for podcasters. Anyone can go and get this and install it. It's pretty simple to set up. You know, you download the zip file, you unzip it. There is a PDF with some instructions in there. You don't necessarily need them, but you should read through them anyway. It's basically just make sure that you can use Netflix on that PC inside of Internet Explorer. That's important. Run the setup. Launch Netflix from inside of Media Center. Now, let me take another step back. This whole setting up Netflix inside of IE, it's really important for two reasons. One, since you're using IE, it's also using Silverlight, and you need to make sure that the Silverlight plugin is up to date and stuff. And you can find that out a whole lot easier if you just try and run Netflix.com straight from inside of IE and make sure to clear away any warnings and updates and all that crap that IE might give you. I had to go through all of this on my box when I went to play around with this. Trust me, just do it before trying to use Mark's app.
Yeah, in fact, my advice with Silverlight, if you haven't used it in a while, is just uninstall what was there before and do a fresh install Silverlight.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. The other thing that's important about this is Mark has not written authentication code into his app. He's just hosting Internet Explorer inside of his app, basically, which is both good and good, really. There's not really any bad sides to this, in my opinion. The nice thing is, if you're concerned that he's going to steal your Netflix credentials, and I don't know what he would do with your Netflix credentials other than watch your Netflix account. You don't have to worry about that, because he's never going to see him, because it's just using your Netflix cookie inside of the browser. And B, you don't have to worry about trying to enter Netflix credentials from Media Center. You get your keyboard and all that stuff out once when you're installing this app, and then you're done. You don't need to mess with that anymore. So that's a really good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's great. You know that I like that. And while I'm far less worried about my Netflix ID than I am my Amazon ID, because I can't really go shopping for stuff with Netflix.
Right.
It's not so much that you don't necessarily trust a particular developer, but there's so much that goes on nowadays with hacking and information being sniffed, and you just don't know how secure that is. So the fact that he's leaving that entirely up to Netflix, I think is great.
Yep, I think that was a really, really smart idea, for sure. So once you've got this all installed, it places a nice little Netflix tile in your start menu inside of Windows Media Center. It does not put it on the movie strip where the Netflix icon used to be, although I'm sure you could use one of the many Media Center customization tools to move it there if you wanted it there. You launch it, and when you first launch it, it isn't that dissimilar from the old experience. It is launching a Windows app. It's not actually running anything inside of Media Center to do this, but it's all completely full screen, and you're not really going to notice that much. Now, that's not, this is still beta. So there's some bugs there, or maybe some things that I'm sure Mark is working to clean up. I was getting a little blue message box. I don't even remember exactly what it said. Something about, actually, I think it was a message about Silverlight that I think once I went back and redid all my Silverlight stuff, that might have gone away. And then you're up and running, and it works mostly with your remote. Now, I had some issues here with this. The arrow keys all worked. You know, you can arrow around throughout the interface just fine. And it has a little red highlight underneath of the items that you're selecting, which I could see well enough. I don't have a giant TV. I wasn't sitting all the way across the room, but it's maybe not as obvious what you're selecting. But frankly, I still think it's easier to see what it is that you're choosing between than even some of the apps built into the Xbox One, like the Groove Music app, which I can never tell what I have selected on the Xbox One. So you can arrow around with the arrow keys on your remote, hit the OK button to select one, hit the OK button again to start playing. That all works just fine. The problems that I had were pause didn't work. I didn't actually try rewind because I tried pause. That didn't work. Then I tried stop. Stop did work and took me back out to the main screen, which is good. But what also didn't work for me is back. And I got the feeling that from the PDF instructions that the back key would work. But like if I went into a TV series and then try to back out to the main screen, I couldn't. So not quite sure what's going on there. I'm sure it'll get fixed, but it wasn't working for me just yet. Not sure again about fast forward and rewind, but I'm sure that that's something he is working on. The other thing that isn't there yet, but I know he's working on, is profile support. For me, I've got my main profile, and then there's also the kids' profile. That one gets used a lot. There wasn't really a way that I saw to easily get to the kids section, but maybe that's in there. And I just didn't spend enough time to get to it. But that's something that I would really like to see, and I know he is working on that. So I guess the thing is, it's a great start. It's a beta, and he admits that. He says this isn't done, but if this is something you really want, you've got nothing to lose to try it out. It's totally free. Go and download it, install it, give it a try, and send Mark any feedback that you have, you know, any issues that you're having. You know, he's actually in the chat right now giving me some ideas and things to try and asking for some feedback directly. So I'm going to get with him after the show to send him that information. But yeah, he's a developer. Developers love getting feedback on this stuff, and you've got no reason not to give this a try. So we'll of course have a link to this plugin on the show notes.
So two things I want to add here. One, sure. You know, I'm a UI guy. The UI on this stuff is critically important to me. This is awesome. This looks like the applications that you run on other platforms. And I don't know if that's because he's repurposing stuff that's actually already published by Netflix or if he's recreating it, but it looks great. So many kudos there. The other thing that I want to mention is if you like this and you want to see it happen and you want to help support Mark, then I'd encourage you to go to his site. Again, we'll have a link in the show notes and kick in a few bucks. He has a donation capability on the site, and you may want to help him out with this.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people already have. His site actually shows how much he's received so far. And I think that's great to see the community stepping up and giving him a little bit of money for his effort. All right. So that is Netflix on Media Center. Let's move on to some gaming news. You know, going into this week, I didn't think we'd really have that much, but I kind of forgot the fact that that new update came out after we recorded last week.
Yeah,
and you
right.
Haven't actually tried it yet. So,
well, I have now.
You have now. So you've got the new Xbox experience on your Xbox One. What do you think?
So, as I predicted, The icons on the left-hand side are practically indiscernible from my sofa. Although, I would also say that perhaps with the exception of snapping, most of the stuff over there, I'm never going to pay any attention to anyway.
Right, because you're not a gamer. So you don't care about, you probably don't care about friends list, and you probably don't care about parties, and you don't care about achievements, and yeah.
Exactly. And one of the things that they've really done with this update is they've really tailored it toward people who are into community or shared gaming experiences. So if you go and you really just want to play games on your own, or if you want to use the box primarily as, I don't know, a streaming device for video or access to apps or something like that, that isn't as readily available as it was before. It's there, but except for getting to the last thing that you just did in the big box, like it always has been on the dashboard, if you want to get to the stuff that you have, like your pins or even your collection of apps, I can't tell you how long it took me to find my games. Where are my games? I couldn't even find them. It was ridiculous.
You eventually found them.
I eventually found them. But to get to that, you have to navigate past stuff.
A bunch of stuff.
To get to that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. You obviously have to go past the giant image of whatever the last thing is. And then the last four things that you did to get down to the bottom of that list where you can get to my games and apps.
Yes. And that is identified as a bunch of pins, except the first thing in the list there, and this is different from the way that they've been doing it for years now, the first thing in the list is everything else, and then you have your pins. So it's easy to miss the fact that all your stuff, all your games, all your apps, everything that's actually installed on your device is in that first tile.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to find at first. It's definitely something you could skip right over. And even if you're just kind of, I know this sounds kind of silly, but not paying that much attention as you're trying to get down to whatever you're doing. But I think that's fairly common. Like if I'm trying to get to something while the kids are doing stuff in the room, it might not have all of my attention and I might just blow right past it and have to go back.
Right.
Plus there's the fact that I just have to go so far just to get there. And
right.
I know what a lot of people are thinking. Just press right trigger on your controller and it'll take you down there. But I'm not using my controller all the time.
Right, and neither am I. And they even have a little hint on the screen, readily available as you use that first view on the dashboard, that you can just go down to the bottom of the list to get to everything that you really want. Well, as a UI guy, let me give you a little bit of a hint. If you have to put instructions on your screen as to where to go for the thing that you think people went there for, you're doing it wrong.
Right. The hint is, if you have to give me a hint, you're doing it wrong. I don't need instructions. I shouldn't need instructions. I mean, this is what we've been complaining about from the very beginning. I really hope that this is going to get fixed, but I'm not. And it will eventually. Eventually, they'll do another big refresh or, you know, but maybe in the shorter term, they'll do some smaller enhancements to make this less difficult to get to that stuff.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was really weird is that with those tiny little icons, I don't really understand why they're so tiny, because they're not even over to the far left edge of the available screen real estate. Like, why not just take up more space and make them a teeny bit bigger?
Right. You could make them twice the size and it wouldn't impact anything negatively. Now, the only thing that I could think of is when you open up that left-hand guide bar, it's the same icons and they're the same size. And you would need to shrink them when that thing opens. But that's not hard. I don't know that would be visually jarring and bad. I don't know. We'll see. So what else? You got 360 game compatibility. Is that a big deal to you? Probably not.
Well, not a big deal, but it was nice to see that all of the 360 games that I've been getting from Games with Gold, maybe not all of them, but many of them, are also now available on my Xbox One. So it's available in both rooms now, which I kind of like. I didn't try installing any of my games that I have on disc. I haven't tried that yet. Although I did notice that one of the games that I had at one point loaded, because remember, I have a lot of games that I probably never even put into an Xbox at any point in time. But the game that I know that I've tried to play on my other device, so it was on my account and I had achievements for it, it automatically loaded up as one of the games that I could download, which I thought was pretty nice.
Cool.
How about you?
I don't have a lot of the 360 games that fall under the backwards compatibility.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I own any of them on disc. The only ones that I had that were available to download digitally were two of the games that I got via the Games with Gold. Dirt 3, which was the available for the first half of this month, and I love the Dirt series, so I'm actually excited to play that. And then in August, I think it was, they did Gears of War 3, which I downloaded because a friend of mine really likes Gears of War, so maybe he'll want to play it on my Xbox. I don't know. So that's it. And I checked out Dirt a little bit. And then last week I mentioned that there was a bunch of deals on Xbox 360 games. And one of them that was available was NBA Jam for $5. And that was backwards compatible. So I bought that too, because NBA Jam is just tons of fun. Yeah, I'm not a basketball guy, but NBA Jam is a lot of fun. And check that out. I've played that a few times actually, and really enjoying that. I don't like how long it takes for the 360 games to start, but other than that, it's been really good.
You thought it took a long time?
Yeah, because it has to do it does like this gray screen with the big progress bar and all that stuff, and it took, I don't know, a minute or so.
Wow. I don't really remember it taking that long. I'll have to try another game and see what the experience is.
Hmm.
All right. Well, now the other thing that is probably worth mentioning, we talked a while ago about how you were going to be able to map your controller buttons when the update came out, and that capability is now there. You don't just have to have that Elite controller. You can now do this with any controller. It's an option now available to you.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So that's the new software on the Xbox. If you want some games, it's the second half of the month of November now. So you've got new Games with Gold to go and check out. On the Xbox One side, it's Night Squad, which is an indie game. Looks like it could be a lot of fun. It's 8 players. Not really sure, but it's free. So I'm going to check it out. And then the other one is Dungeon Siege 3. That's on Xbox 360, and hey, it's backwards compatible, because from here on out, every Xbox 360 game that's available with Games with Gold is going to be backwards compatible on the Xbox One. So if you've got an Xbox One, you're now getting double the free games every month with Games with Gold from now on. So that's cool.
And these are good until, what, the middle of December, I think, right?
Well, it's stupid and confusing. Night Squad is available until the middle of December. Dungeon Siege 3 is only good through the end of November, because the Xbox 360 games actually make sense for their schedule. It's first half of the month for one, second half of the month for the other. It's nice and simple. With the Xbox One games, they do this weird thing where it's like, we're going to start a game on the 15th and you can get it for a whole month. And then we're just going to start another game on the next 15th. It's weird. I wish they would consolidate them and just make them the same on both sides.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, if you're looking for some deals on games, of course, Black Friday's coming up and there'll be deals at all of the stores and stuff. You know, there's already been lots of leaked Black Friday ads for a lot of the stores. But what if you don't like buying physically? Well, it looks like Microsoft is going to be having their own Black Friday sale on digital games from their library. And We know very, very little about this, but today they released a YouTube video, a little promo, and they said they're going to have 150 games from 40 to 60% off. They're also going to give those of you with Xbox Live Gold early access to this sale starting this Friday, November 20th. The rest of you will have to wait until Black Friday. And they also teased getting a month of Xbox Live Gold for $1, which I guess is cool.
I think it's pretty cool. I want to know if I can use that as an add-on to my existing subscription.
You definitely can. What I want to know is, can I stack them? Can I buy $12 worth of them?
I seriously doubt that.
Yeah, they're probably not going to let me do that, but that would be awesome. Because, yeah, anytime that you buy Xbox Live Gold subscriptions and you plug them in, it just extends. You're never losing time by adding on to your Xbox Live Gold subscription. So what are the games that are going to be on sale? Well, they didn't tell us exactly or how much these games are going to be discounted specifically. But in the video, we saw some of these big name titles: Forza 6, Shadow of Mordor, Witcher 3, Evolve, Gears of War, although I don't know which Gears of War. Halo the Master Chief Collection was in there. One of the Batman games was in there. So there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff. It's Xbox One and Xbox 360 games, so definitely going to be checking out those deals. Well, I'll be checking them out on November 20th because I've got a gold subscription. But for the rest of you, Black Friday for sure. Check it out. So cool. Earlier we were talking about the latest update to the Xbox One console. Obviously, it's the biggest update they've had on the Xbox One yet. But one thing that we've really grown accustomed to is monthly releases of, you know, just little, it's usually little tweaks here and there. Sometimes it's a feature or two. Most of these updates haven't been super big, but unfortunately, we're going to be waiting. And, you know, maybe this isn't entirely unfortunate. There are good reasons behind this, but we're going to be waiting a little bit longer than usual for this next release. I was listening to Major Nelson's podcast. He's, of course, the main marketing guy for Xbox. And he was talking with Mike Ibarra, I believe is how you pronounce it, at another higher up in the Xbox org at Microsoft. And he said they're not going to be releasing another update to the Xbox One until February. And the reasoning makes a whole lot of sense.
They're all going on vacation?
Well, that's basically part of it. And he did kind of hint at that. But it's also, now would be a really bad time to release a buggy update. You know, can you imagine if they release a buggy update right before Christmas and then a whole bunch of people get consoles for Christmas? Or maybe they've had them for a while, but they've been working or at school. And so they're really looking forward to the holidays to actually spend some time playing. And if they released a buggy update and that messed it up for everybody, that would be bad.
Yeah.
So instead, they're not going to do one in December. They're not going to do one in January so as not to rock the boat too much for people who are getting new consoles for the holidays. And we'll see another update in February. Of course, he said nothing as to what we can expect in that February update, but we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as being someone who likes being in the preview program and likes getting the latest stuff as soon as possible, I'm a little bummed not to get the latest stuff. And I'd really like them to tweak that UI like we were talking about earlier, sooner rather than later. But this does make a lot of sense. All right, so we mentioned some deals. Well, it's nice to save money on games, but it doesn't beat getting games for free. And this weekend, if you're an Xbox Live Gold member, you're going to be able to play NBA 2K16 for free all weekend. You don't have to buy it. You're just going to be able to log in starting at 9 a.m. Pacific on Friday the 20th. Download the game. It'll be free for everybody, and you'll be able to play it up until 11:59 p.m. Pacific Sunday the 22nd. So it's all weekend long, NBA 2K16 for free. So if you're into basketball at all, I've heard really great things about this game. I'm not a big basketball player, so I probably won't waste the bandwidth downloading this, but I've heard very good things about this game, and it's cool. Free.
Yeah, very cool.
So one other quick gaming thing that I wanted to hit on. Saw a few articles out there over the last few days talking about SteamOS. You know, we've seen a lot of news from Valve over the last couple of years as they've been trying to push SteamOS and their Steam machines and trying to say that, you know, this is the way to play games in your living room. Buy one of these machines, hook that up to your TV. It's going to be way better than a console because it's PC gaming. Well, it may or may not be better than a console, but one thing we know for sure, it's not better than gaming on Windows. Ars Technica did an analysis on this, and basically, across the board, performance on games was significantly better on Windows than it was on SteamOS. What the crap is SteamOS, you might ask? It's basically just Linux with some Steam stuff built on top of it. And, you know, the unfortunate thing, if you're a Linux guy, the drivers just aren't as optimized. That's basically what it comes down to. The video card drivers just aren't as optimized for Linux because most people are playing on Windows, not Linux. So that's something that Steam, I think, is really going to have to try and push the video card manufacturers on. But I don't know that they're going to see a lot of incentive to spend that kind of development effort really tuning these drivers for an OS that just doesn't see a lot of usage. It's kind of like being a Windows phone guy.
Well, yeah, and this kind of jumps ahead a little bit, but I might as well bring this up now. I had a story in the lineup for later industry news about how of the 14 manufacturers that were touted to be planning to release Steam OS boxes way back 2 years ago when you and I were laughing about this at CES, only three of them are actually launching now, and many wow. have either delayed or one, in fact, has just completely canceled, saying, no, we're not doing it. And there are a lot of reasons for it, performance being one, but it also seems like largely because of OS or driver limitations, some of these boxes can only have, say, one hard drive in them or one graphics card in them. So there are a lot of limitations that make this platform far less than the ideal that they were touting, certainly at CES. And I think I think next year is going to be the make it or break it. I think this is either going to happen or it's not. I don't think this is going to be like Ubuntu TVs and phones and everything else that we keep on hearing about year after year after year. I think this is going to die pretty quickly if we don't see any actual hardware support.
Yeah, and I still just wonder how much real interest there is from the community. You know, PC gamers are in large part PC gamers because they like doing stuff with their PCs. If they wanted a console experience, they would probably just buy a console. It'd certainly save them a lot of headaches, but they're not, you know, because they like doing PC stuff. So, you know, that's been my argument from the beginning. I don't really think this is ever going to take off. And given the performance decreases, you know, that's one of the big benefits that PC gamers are always touting over their console counterparts is, you know, I can throw this $500 video card in my machine and it runs at 4K resolution at 120 frames per, you know, crazy benchmarks and stuff. Okay, sure, but you've also spent way, way, way more money than me and had to go through a whole lot more effort. I just download the game and it works. So, whatever. All right, let's wrap up this gaming news and move on to some mobile news. We finally got some launch dates for the new first Windows phone flagship phones in almost 2 years.
Yeah, well, flagship, I think, is stretching that definition a little bit. But yeah, the Lumia 950s that we've been talking about, and I think we had a hint of this. I believe last week we spoke about how we expected that they would be out on the 20th. AT&T actually has a press release out, in fact, saying, yes, we're going to have them. In fact, as we're recording on Tuesday, you could go online and order one, but they'll be in stores on Friday the 20th so that you can pick up the 950. Nothing about the 950 XL. So I think the news that we had heard that that might only be available through Microsoft is probably going to be correct there. Pricing on this is kind of interesting. You know, we were speculating, is this going to be on one of those month-to-month things? Is it going to be through a contract? It's both. And the contract price isn't too bad. It's basically $150.
Yep. And the month-to-month thing, those prices line up with what you expect. The next 24 plan is about $20. The next 12 is about $30. That's what we're used to seeing for higher-end phones when they first come out. Is there an off-contract price listed in here that I'm not seeing? I imagine it's $550. I think that's what Microsoft said this thing was going to cost. But I don't
see it in here. I don't see it in here, and I suspect if you want it unlocked, you don't want to buy it from AT&T.
Probably not. There's also another little thing in here that some may not have noticed. If you purchase a Lumia 950 on AT&T Next, which is the monthly plans, you could purchase a Surface 3 for $400 on a 2-year agreement. So I think that's because I'm assuming that's going to be the Surface 3 with LTE, which I'm thinking starts at $630. So you're probably getting at least $130 off of that. So if you're also looking for a tablet, that could be an interesting deal for you. I want to go a different direction here, though. So we've got the 950. It's coming out on AT&T. We've got the 950 XL, which is only going to be available from the Microsoft store. My question is, why did Microsoft intentionally hold the 950 XL back from themselves, or did AT&T not want it? And if they didn't want it, what does that say about the state of Windows Phone right now? We've got our first quote-unquote flagships in more than a year and a half, and we can only get one of them, which isn't even the top-of-the-line one, available from only one carrier in the entire country. You know, the country where Microsoft is located. I know it's that these are available on certain carriers in other countries, but here in the U.S., we can't even get the top-of-the-line one directly from any carriers. And the lower-end one, it's still a high-end phone, but the lower-end one is only available on one carrier. If Microsoft's premier partner, AT&T has always been the premier partner for Windows Phone, if they're not even offering the highest-end phone, that doesn't seem good for Windows Phone at all.
Yeah, I guess I would say that if AT&T themselves decided that they were only taking the 950, I would imagine it was because of something like them saying that, all right, well, you have new phones coming out, we'll take one of them and see how it does. And if they're going to take one of them, I think they're more likely to sell the one that isn't giant-sized.
I don't know. Giant-sized Android phones are selling well. The giant-sized iPhone is selling well, right?
They're selling well, but they're not leading their categories.
Hmm. Okay. I think I'm a little bit more worried about this than you are. I think that this is the scariest news that I've seen about Windows Phone in years, unless Microsoft intentionally held it back.
I don't know. And why would they do that? I mean, I don't know that that makes a whole lot of sense either.
Right. Doesn't make any sense.
I'm not concerned until we see what happens with the next phone. I think the next phone is going to be the real tell. I don't know why I don't think it's this one, mainly because it's been so long since we've seen a new device that it was even remotely interesting. This is kind of interesting. I think the next one is going to be the tell. And honestly, I don't have high hopes. I hate to say it, but I just don't think things are looking good for this right now.
Yeah, I've never been more nervous about Windows Phone's future than I am right now. And I hate saying that, but...
Well, just in case you were worried about the fact that you might not be able to do everything that you wanted to do in your Windows Phone, Oh, wait, you're right. If you were thinking that the new Windows phones might soon allow you to run Android applications, to sideload APKs and run them on your Windows phone, like we'd been told, like we'd been teased, like many people have hoped for a long time, in all likelihood, it's either not going to happen for a very, very long time, or plain old not going to happen.
Yeah, this was called Project Astoria. They announced it back at Build this year. I don't think their intention was actually to throw this on Windows phones and have people sideloading APKs because of the piracy that tends to go along with that, but more of, you know, they were calling all of these technologies bridges. And I think that they were kind of hoping that it would be just that, a bridge for developers to get their Android apps over to Windows Phone. But yeah, it sounds like they're stopping this and that it might not ever happen. And, you know, I remember, you know, I've read some of the articles about this and, you know, some of them said, you know, Microsoft hasn't made any official announcements about the future of Project Astoria. But you know what? That's what Microsoft does when they kill things. They don't make announcements that they're killing things. They just don't do them anymore.
Well, heck, that's what Microsoft does when they are doing things. They just don't talk about it until they feel like it.
Yeah, that's not as true now. You know, they really like to stay in the news cycle and they like to give us updates on, at least on the bigger things, obviously. But yeah, I don't see this going anywhere. Now, Project Islandwood, I think they're probably still working on that. That is their bridge for porting iOS apps. And that's actually porting. That's taking your iOS app and porting it using some Microsoft native libraries for things like mapping and all of those types of things into your iOS app. I think that will continue. And you know, when they announced all of this, I was a lot more excited about Project Islandwood because I'd rather have iOS versions of apps than Android version of apps because they tend to look better and be better, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't think, see, maybe I'm misunderstanding because I thought that we also were looking at a tool set that would help you port your Android apps, not just emulation, but actually port the Android app, be able to take an APK and migrate it to something that was native. Wasn't that still on the table too?
I thought that was part of this. And That's definitely what the iOS version is and the other bridges that they announced, because they announced one for web apps and for regular Windows, you know, Win32 apps. But I didn't go back and like re-listen to the announcement or reread the announcements from back when all of this was announced at Build this spring. But I thought there was part of that too. And yeah, I guess our best case here is that the porting aspect of this still happens for Android, even if the emulation part doesn't happen.
Right. I think that should still happen. I was never a big fan of the emulation. I never quite understood that anyway. That always sounded to me like a move that admitted defeat.
Yeah, and I think I think all of this, though, is problematic for developers. And I think that's part of the reason that this stuff may be taking a little longer than maybe we had hoped for. Because if you've been a long-time Windows or Windows Phone developer, and now they're saying, just take your iOS app and port it using your iOS stuff. Like, you're still doing these things in Objective-C, and you would still be doing the Android apps in Java. Then what does that say to their traditional Windows developers? We don't really care about you guys anymore. We just want the Android and the iOS developers. Forget you guys. That's not cool. Not cool at all.
Yep. Agreed. Well, I will be looking further into the Android porting because I think that's still relevant.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. One final industry news story. And this is relevant because if you have a Windows phone, one of your music apps may be Ardio, if you're an Ardio listener. And just this week, it was announced that Pandora is expected to buy the assets of Ardio and the IP and likely half of the staff, and that Ardio is otherwise declaring bankruptcy and shutting itself down at some point in time. We don't know what the timeline for that is yet, but it's very possible that your Ardio service is going to stop working fairly soon.
And, you know, I didn't get a chance to really read up on all of the news here. Is it basically just they lost to Spotify?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, all of these companies have been under enormous pressure by the industry to get better licensing deals and pay more fees for performance and everything. And I even Pandora has been very publicly fighting a lot of this stuff, trying to keep themselves alive. And I just think that we're starting to see a shakeout. I think we're starting to see that not everybody's going to be able to pull this off. And Ardio, you know, they were kind of like the scrapping organization, but they had raised a fair amount of capital. I think they had raised something like $150 million, if I'm correct on that. And I think it's expected to sell for just $75
million. Oh, geez.
So some bargain basement prices there. I had hoped that my Pandora stock would go up this week, but it hasn't. So who knows? But what's interesting is that this is not really the model that Pandora has been involved in.
No.
Ardio is an on-demand service. They also offer stations, but they're primarily known as a Spotify competitor for on-demand access. And there have been hints that Pandora was expecting to get into a more broadened offering of music services and maybe services that the music industry might be able to license more to their favor. So this could be their ticket to do that.
Yep. All right. So that's it for all of our news for the week. We like to wrap up the show by talking about what we've been watching and playing. So what have you been up to lately, Richard?
Well, I was trying to play some music off of my home server the other day and it was choking. And I started panicking. And then I went to try and access some photos and upload some photos to my home server. And it was choking. And I was panicking. Because how many times has this happened to me this year?
It seems like every time that you've tried to use your home server.
Not every time, because I use it quite a lot, actually. But if you're counting, this is the third time this year that I have had problems with my home server. Well, it wasn't my home server. Again, it was the switch. This time, not because I was dumb and knocked the power out of the switch, but because my old plastic white, so how old is it, Netgear switch, probably 5 or 6 years old by now, eventually it had enough. It said, no, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired of having to pass your word through. You know, you want to talk to this box, just do it directly.
You know, I don't understand why devices like this fail. Like five years doesn't seem old for a switch. It doesn't do anything. It's just a network.
I don't know
switch.
Either. I don't know either. Because it has tons of air. I make sure that it's placed in a position that there's lots of air circulation. It's not going to overheat. I only had three things plugged into it. It's a 5-slot switch, five device switch, whatever. I was apparently overtaxing it for longer than it was expected to live. So I bought a new one, a managed switch, and suddenly everything works again.
Wait. You bought a managed switch? Why?
I bought one of those like managed light, you know, like not heavy duty managed, but you can tweak some of the settings. So I don't know that your network IT person would consider it a managed switch, but it's the one that's between the completely unmanaged and the completely managed version.
And you're going to do nothing to manage this thing, right?
No, but I figure it's got to be better, right?
theoretically, or it just has more things to go wrong.
And if you follow me on Twitter, this is why I was filling out a manual rebate form today and putting it in an envelope with a stamp so that they can send me a check to get my rebate.
That's pretty old school.
How crazy is that? All right. Well, meanwhile, I have been watching some television because I got way behind while I was traveling. I am caught up now on The Flash, on Arrow, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., on Fargo. I watched the Supergirl premiere. I liked it, but not enough that I've watched any more of it, so that might tell you something. This weekend, I watched Tomorrowland, a Disney movie that came out a couple of months ago on disc, and I hadn't had a chance to watch it, and I really liked it. It was cool. It was a little preachy, but I thought it was cool. And in case anybody is paying attention or interested, this Friday, The Man in the High Castle on Amazon drops the full 10 episodes available all at once. If you're interested in watching that, I watched the first two episodes since they're now available, and I really like them, so you may want to check this out. And even though I've been watching all this television, I still maxed out my storage on my recorded TV drive. So I spent a good amount of time this weekend copying about 500 gigs of stuff off to Adrobo because I ran out of recording space.
All right. So that it for you?
That's it for me.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. We know that you're a hoarder. Yeah. All right. So for me, you want to know how much TV I watched? None TV.
What?
None. I haven't watched any TV in the last week. If you don't count sports, because I don't. No one cares if I watched a college football game here or a hockey game there. But I didn't watch anything. I played a lot of video games because there's a lot of really good video games out. I didn't even watch Into the Badlands. I did record it, and I'm really interested in that series. It's a new show on AMC. It premiered right after The Walking Dead. Most of you know that I've been watching The Walking Dead, but you know, what I've realized is with every single season, I get friggin' bored with this show. And I'm at that point again with The Walking Dead. And I'm not all that excited to try and catch up in a hurry, especially when I've got better things to do, like play awesome video games. So I also haven't gotten into the Badlands yet. My only opportunity would have been last night, and I didn't have an opportunity last night. So maybe in the next week, I'll try and watch that because it does look interesting. If you wanted to see this, because it looks cool, but you forgot to set your DVR, you can go and watch this on AMC's website, even if you don't have cable. They have episode one up there. No login required. You can just go and watch it on AMC's website. So that's cool. So that's it for me on the TV side. On the gaming side, this is where I fill the slack for you, Richard. I finally finished Ori and the Blind Forest. Man, was that game hard. I know I've been saying that. It was so, so worth it. It was really, really good. I died about 450 times, plus or minus 5 or 10. They keep track of this for you. It was really good and totally worth it. Definitely get that. Although, if you're interested in Ori and the Blind Forest, maybe wait because there's an updated version of it coming soon-ish. I don't know when exactly because they haven't given us a date. But it's called Ori and the Blind Forest, the definitive edition. I think that's what it's called. But they haven't really said what's better about the new version. But it's such a great game. You should play this at some point. I've also got Call of Duty. Still working through the main campaign on that. That story gets friggin' weird about three quarters of the way through the campaign. It gets really, really weird. But I do still mostly understand it. There's been some people out there who have said that it's completely incomprehensible. It's not. You just have to be paying attention and you have to like spy stories and stuff like that. So that's cool. And of course, the multiplayer is great. And then I've also been playing a little bit of Fallout 4, not nearly as much as I'd like to play. Frankly, I would like to play 40 or 50 hours a week, but I can't because I have to work and I have a family and you know things like that. So I'm only 5-ish hours into Fallout 4. So I've got dozens of hours of Fallout ahead of me. It may be a little while before I actually catch up on things like The Walking Dead, and I'm now way behind on Quantico. I'm now 2 episodes behind on Heroes at this point. And none of this stuff seems more interesting to me than Call of Duty and Fallout. So I don't know. Not sure what I'm going to get back to those. It is my turn to make a podcast suggestion. And I'm going to throw Richard for a loop here and not do what I wrote down in the notes. Instead, I'm going to go with a different one that is going to be even less well-known, I'm sure. It's a newer show. It's called Tuner. T-U-N-E-R. We'll, of course, have a link for this in the show notes. This is a very different show. It's not political. It's not news of any sort. It is a show about music. Their tagline is, there's more to pop than meets the ear. And it's a show, I believe it's bi-weekly, and they talk about, they just basically pick a really popular song and talk about what makes it so great, what makes it so catchy. If you're not into music at all in terms of like music theory or actually playing instruments and stuff, then it might be a little more in depth than you're really looking for, because they talk about how beats work and how they work together and syncopation and different rhythms and, you know, lots of different things like that. If you're into that sort of thing, you're going to love the show, I think. And these guys really, really know their stuff. The most recent episode I listened to came out just before Halloween. So they were talking about Michael Jackson's Thriller. And it was just, it was great to listen to how this song all comes together and all of the different aspects of it that make it such a great, great pop song. Even, you know, I'm not a big pop music listener, but everyone knows most of these songs. You know, they did one on Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. Of course, they've got Thriller, you know, and some other ones that if you do listen to popular music, I'm sure they'll all be familiar to you. But this is a fun little podcast, and it's fairly short. Each episode is, you know, less than 20 minutes, and it's only every other week. So no reason not to check out Tuner as your next podcast.
That sounds cool. It sounds like a bit of a twist on Song Exploder.
I don't know Song Exploder.
Where they kind of dissect all of what it went into a theme or a song or something like that. Maybe it's called Sound Exploder? No, Song Exploder. I don't remember exactly. I think it is part of PRX, the group that does 99% Invisible. Oh. Anyway, very cool recommendation, Josh.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying it, and I think a lot of you will also. Unfortunately, no music minute for you guys this week from Marcus. Hopefully, the next episode will have a new one from him. I'm sure he's working on some pretty cool things for you guys. We do have one announcement. This is episode 350 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, and this is the last podcast we're going to do for the month of November. Yeah, only for the month of November. Next week is a holiday week here in the United States. It's American Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving. It's just Thanksgiving. I don't need to qualify that with American Thanksgiving. It's the real Thanksgiving.
Hey, we have Canadian listeners, I am sure. So it is Thanksgiving in the U.S. I'm sorry about Josh's comment.
Oh, come on. They know I'm just having fun. So next week just isn't going to work out in terms of recording, because I'll be traveling and then production and all that stuff. So we're going to take the week off, spend that time with your family, and then get ready to buy some of those Xbox games, I suppose. And then we'll be back the following week for the next episode. So we're not actually really going away. So if you want to send us some feedback for the next episode, you can do that in a lot of ways. If you want to talk to us in probably the closest thing to real time, you can reach out to us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. If you're more of a Facebook person than a Twitter person, then you can like us at facebook.com/theDMZ. You can send us some email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Can also check out some of our other podcasts, like The End User, covering tech news from the end user perspective, or Richard's other show, Home On. We had, was it two episodes last week or the week before?
So it was the week before.
We're not going to have to wait like double the time to get the next episode because of that, are we?
No, we're not. This episode this week is the two panels from the Kitchen Summit that I hosted. And what's next? Well, I know what I'm trying to line up, but I don't want to announce it just in case I don't get it set.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to that as usual. You can find all of these podcasts from the DMZ on iTunes, on Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. We're pretty much everywhere that you can find podcasts. We're also on that new Google Podcast thing, whatever the heck that's called. I think it's just Google Podcast, isn't it?
Yes, but it's not there yet. So Everybody that's telling people that they can go find their shows there, you can't. It's not there yet. It will be.
Oh.
But it's not there yet.
Okay. Well, then scratch that.
I mean, it's not that we're not there yet, but the store isn't there yet. So.
Okay. I wouldn't know that since I'm not really a Google guy. Thanks for clarifying that. And then if you want to talk to us in actual real time, you can do that too, because we record this show live. That means that you can stream us while we're recording it, and there's a chat room on the page. There's a few guys in the chat room tonight. We thank them for coming along. It always makes the show more fun for us to record, and it allows you to give us feedback or correct us on all the mistakes that we make while we're making them so that we can fix them in the show. So come out and do that. Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern is when we typically record. We always tweet about the time and location for the show. So just follow us on Twitter if you want to know for sure when we're going to be recording. But typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. But that's going to do it for episode 350. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for episode 351. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.